This is
Make It Kind.
M.I.P.
with Masamela Matfumo.
Mark Thompson.
Make It Kind.
Get woke.
This podcast is sponsored by Talkspace. You know when you're really stressed or not feeling so great about your life or about yourself? Talking to someone who understands can really help. But who is that person? How do you find them? Where do you even start? Talkspace. Talkspace makes it easy to get the support you need. With Talkspace, you can go online, answer a few questions about your preferences, and be matched with a therapist. And because you'll meet your therapist online, you don't have to take time off work or arrange childcare. You'll meet on your schedule, wherever you feel most at ease. If you're depressed, stressed, struggling with a relationship, or if you want some counseling for you and your partner, or just need a little extra one-on-one support, Talkspace is here for you. Plus, Talkspace works with most major insurers, and most insured members have a $0 copay. No insurance? No problem. Now, get $80 off of your first month with promo code SPACE80 when you go to Talkspace.com. Match with a licensed therapist today at Talkspace.com. Save $80 with code SPACE80 at Talkspace.com.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
New from Radiotopia presents Red for Revolution, an audio drama about Black love, queer romance, and liberation. Join Jasmine, an 18-year-old navigating her queer identity while learning about her grandmother's secret love affair. Through her discoveries, we're transported back to 1971 to witness two remarkable women embark on a romance that defies all conventions. Subscribe to Radiotopia Presents and listen to Red for Revolution wherever you get your podcasts.
No matter what Donald Trump says, folks, it is African American History Month. And we don't need his permission nor that devil's validation to acknowledge it and celebrate it. But we do well to think about it in the context of what our options are. A lot of people have ideas, a lot of people want to do this and that. But the wheel has already been invented. And some of us like to start over from scratch, but the wheel has already been invented when it comes to what we must do as a people in every aspect of life. Du Bois once said, by the time the Europeans even heard of Africa, the whole of human ingenuity had already been exhausted, meaning that every aspect of life we enjoy, the Africans had already discovered. Obviously, there have been developments, there have been innovations, but the science that allowed the Mars rover to send back HD video from Mars yesterday was science that was originally discovered by our Kemetic ancestors. What we see now is just the building upon that. We must know that about ourselves and love ourselves in that regard. And so here with us, a brother who's no stranger to this audience. But for those of you who don't know, Anthony Browder is the founder of the Institute of Karmic Guidance. He has been an expert scholar and has written prolifically on Nile Valley civilization and ancient Kemet, among other things, and gives a wonderful tour. If you have an opportunity, if you're in the D.C. area, don't just go to the Blacksonian, but take his tour so that you can see the influence of Kemet, as many still call Egypt, on the Potomac. You want to check that out. And so our brother joins us today on this Black History Month, during this Black History Month, to talk about a book he wrote several years ago. Again, the wheel has already been invented. You know, folk want to, for example, let's have boycotts, and then they don't read Letter from the Birmingham Jail. And boycott is the fourth step. I'm not knocking anybody. I support all the boycotts, whatever they are, Target and what have you. But Dr. King had some pretty good success with boycotts, so wouldn't hurt to read what he did and how he did it. That's all I'm saying. And just because some of us are popular today and some of us have Instagram accounts does not mean that we are well versed in the political strategies that we need to apply in this moment. So let's all try to humble ourselves and read, learn, understand. That's what Black History Month is supposed to be about. We're supposed to be learning, not over talking one another and trying to impress one another, but learning and reading and understanding our history. So in this moment, what better conversation to have than have a conversation around Anthony Browder's book, Survival Strategies for Africans in America, 13 Steps. You know, I thought about that, Tony. First of all, brother, welcome.
Hey, thank you. Thank you, Mark, Reverend Mark. Thank you for setting the record straight and reminding us that we're living in an era where our cell phones are smarter than the users.
Ooh.
People talk a lot and don't know what they're talking about. And just because you have a microphone does not mean that you have something to say.
Amen. I couldn't help but think about the 13 steps, you know, when people in recovery as a 12-step program, you know, there's more than recovery from substance addiction. We need recovery from a European assimilation. So I wonder if we can, if you got a 13, we ought to employ this as a 13-step program for us to get out from under that, you know?
Well, look, brother, the complete title is 13 Steps to Freedom. So the goal is freedom. And I reference freedom in the literal sense of the word, freeing your dome, freeing your mind.
Right.
And if you don't have mental freedom, if you don't know who you are, if you aren't grounded to a culture that validates your humanity, then you're just occupying space. So
That's
it's
right.
important that we have some historical context, as you referenced. And not just have an opinion on something that we know very little about. So what I've done in this book, Survival Strategies for Africans in America, 13 Steps to Freedom, is to lay out sequential steps that people of African ancestry should take in order to achieve and hold on to this elusive thing called freedom. And these 13 steps are divided into three distinct categories. Focusing on freedom of the mind, freedom of the body, and freedom of the spirit. Unless all three are freed simultaneously, again, you're not free. You're just taking up space.
Let's get started. Mind, body, and spirit, folks. Pull up a chair and let's have this conversation and try it and tell a friend so we can try to get ourselves together. Go ahead, Tony. Let's get us going with the mind. And in chapter one, you acknowledge that we should acknowledge that the most persistent problem confronting us is persistent, y'all, racism and white supremacy.
Yes, sir. It's a chronic problem. And if you don't mind, I like to just run through the 13 steps and then zero in on each one. So the first step is racism and white supremacy are the most persistent problems confronting Africans in America. Step two is become aware of the power of the media. Step three, perception precedes being. You are who you believe you are. Step four, information is power, but power is nothing without control. Step five, empower your mind. See the world through African eyes. First five steps focus on the African mind. The next four steps focus on the African body. Step six is become aware of the uniqueness of your African body. Step seven, develop cultural and holistic approaches to health. Step eight, become aware of your mind-body relationships. Step nine, familiarize yourself with the mysteries of melanin. The next four steps focus on the African spirit. Step 10, learn to interpret religious imagery. Step 11, learn to honor the memory of your ancestors. Step 12, learn to prepare yourself for war and peace. And step 13 is probably the most significant for us at this particular point in time in history. Step 13 is learn how to live in the new America. Now, I wrote this book 29 years ago, brother, and it was an outgrowth of my first book, From the Browder File, which has served as a perennial bestseller. It was a book that put a lot of people on the path to wanting to know more, read more about their history and culture. And I was getting a lot of favorable feedback from that book, and I felt that I could better serve my audience by laying out a process by which they can apply this information in their lives. See, I'm a person who lives with the knowledge that knowledge means nothing if you can't find a way to apply the knowledge in your life. Practical application. And if it doesn't work, then you need to throw it away and find something else that does, because the clinical definition for insanity is doing the same thing over and over again and expecting different results. So to a large extent, the thinking of most Black folk in America is stuck in a mindset that was cultivated in the 50s and 60s. Certain strategies that worked in the 50s and 60s won't work now, because we live in an entirely different era. We have access to more information. And what is clear to me in my years of studying our history and culture is what Neely Fuller, who passed away on the first of this month, who we're going to be lifting up this Thursday. Neely Fuller summed up our reality very simply when he said, if you don't understand the essence of racism and white supremacy, then everything that you think you understand will only confuse you. So when I hear people bemoan the outcome of the recent presidential election and cry crocodile tears, I say, well, they really don't understand this system. They don't understand what's at play and the larger game that's being played. When I heard people complain about Project 2025, what are we going to do? What are we going to do? I said to myself, you really don't understand history, because Project 2025 began right after Congress passed civil rights legislation. It began in 1965, and white folk began to strategize on how they can get their power back and put Negroes in their place. So as A.C. Hilliard used to say, our dear friend and brother A.C. Hilliard used to say, by the time a fool learns the rules of the game, all of the players have gone home. So survival strategies for Africans in America is about laying out 13 steps that will let us understand that this whole thing is a game. As Samuel Jackson said during the Super Bowl halftime show, this is a game. And that there are certain rules, there's certain codes that we need to understand and unpack. And once we apply these codes and rules in our life, we will find that we won't eliminate racism and white supremacy, but we'll find a space where we can negotiate around this persistent problem and achieve modicums of freedom and success that will allow us to build. And we're building not just for ourselves, we're building for our children and grandchildren and great-grandchildren. My philosophy has always been, brother, if we aren't thinking, speaking, and acting 4 generations into the future, at least 60 years, 20, 40, 60, 80 years into the future, we're wasting air. So if anything, this current situation with the current president, whose name I refuse to say, I refer to him as 92, because 45 and 47 is 92. He is creating the environment that will allow those of us who are ready to get our stuff together to get our stuff together. Unfortunately, the masses of our people won't, because they don't understand the importance of freeing their mind, their body, and their spirit, and synchronizing all three in harmony so that we can tap into the genius of our ancestors, the genius that W.B. Du Bois referenced at the top of our discussion. Because we have access to that. It's in our DNA.
Right.
So by knowing these things, we can begin to achieve something that our oppressors never wanted us to achieve or remember that we had access to. So racism and white supremacy are the most persistent problems confronting Africans in America. And it began when this country was first founded. I see you wearing a sweatshirt, 1619. Began before 1619. And it's been codified in the Constitution in every U.S. document. And we have been fighting the same fight since 1619. So these problems are not new. If we study African history, we will study our successes and our failures. And we will find information that will give us a sense of solace and help us not get stuck on stupid as we complain about what our oppressor is doing, but we'll see that he has been consistent in aggressing against us for hundreds of years. Let's examine how our ancestors resisted this oppression and apply those principles that work successfully, adapt those that need to be modified in order for us to achieve success fighting these demons in 2025. So I lay out the history of obstacles that we have had to overcome in step one and provide a blueprint, if you will, for what we need to be doing moving forward. Step two focuses on the media, which is the most powerful form of mind control and mental manipulation ever created. And so we are what we see, and the media determines what we see, what we think, what we speak, and what we do. So we have to understand, and again, I lay out in step two, different examples of how the media has been used to brainwash us. And one of the most important books that I could reference your listening audience, your viewing audience, to get in their library was a book that was written after I wrote Survival Strategies. So it's not in my bibliography, but I would update the bibliography today and say that one must read and study Tom Burrell's book, Brainwashed, Challenging the Myth of Black Inferiority. Burrell, you know, was the creator of Burrell Communications, the largest Black-owned media company in the world, or advertising company in the world. He understood the media. And after three decades of producing ads for Fortune 500 companies and helping them sell products to Black folk, Tom Burrell's motto was, Black folk are not dark-skinned white people. So we have a certain way of responding to images and colors and sound. Right. And so he created advertisements that allow these Fortune 500 companies to make billions off of Black folk. And so at the end of his career, he realized the error in his ways, of his ways. And he wrote Brainwashed to show how the media has been used to perpetuate the brainwashing of Black people. And not only did he lay out vivid examples in all of the chapters, in the very last chapter, Tom Burrell did what I love to do, and that is not just to complain about a problem, but lay out a prescription for resolving it and moving forward.
Yeah. Very, very important.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger for thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
The issue of media is critical. Something you point out, I want to, you mentioned 1965, and folks, I saw an article this morning or report this morning about how, as Tony said, people have been trying to white lash since the 60s to get back some of the victories we won.
Sure.
And now it has become global. When you see people like Elon Musk making the Nazi salute, mm-hmm. PayPal is run by all former white South Africans. Well, now they're not former. I mean, they were raised in South Africa. Mm-hmm. Nazism, apartheid, folk want to bring that back. And just to tie it in the media, who controls our media?
Exactly.
Who controls our social media right now? We are clearly under that control. Step three, perception precedes being. You are who you believe you are. Who do we believe we are, Tony? And how should we see ourselves? Who should we believe ourselves as being?
You know, because of the fact that we've been educated in America, we've been socialized to think like Americans, we've been socialized to think and function like white folk. We've been educated by them. We know their history better than we know our own history.
Right.
We have many of us, too many of us, have adapted their standard of beauty. You know, one of the most popular essays in my first book, From the Brow to File, is entitled The Politics of Hair. And in that essay, I talk about how you can always determine the social status of Black folk and the future of Black folk based on our hairstyle. So I'm right. looking at the 50s and 60s. You know, we was wearing perms and processes. But then in the 60s, we centered ourselves within African history and culture, and we started wearing our hair naturally. We started wearing African clothes. We took on African names. But all of that consciousness, the hair then was a symbol of our raising consciousness. And as our consciousness grew among the African-American population in the late 1960s, the consciousness spread around the world. Stephen Biko said he was influenced by what African-American students were doing. And so our oppressors had to shut that down. Hence, in the early 1970s, we get Superfly, we get the perm, we get Black men getting rid of their froes, getting a perm, and then drugs come in and flood our community. We go from the perm to the Jerry curl. And so now, if we look at what's happening in our society today, we got more sisters with weaves than ever before, fake eyelashes. Fake. So who is the real you? Who gives you your perception of what beauty is? So until you can see yourself, the image that God created, until you can embrace your lips, your hair, your skin tone, the fullness of your shape, the fullness of your nose, until you can embrace those, you will always be a cheap imitation of someone else. And as a consequence, you can never achieve success, power, or anything lasting if you're not being your authentic self. So, you know, this idea, this whole idea harkens back to what Dr. Curtis G. Woodson said in his 1933 publication, The Miseducation of the Negro. If you control a person's thinking, you do not have to worry about their actions. You don't have to tell them to stand here or go there. They will find their proper place and they will stay in it. And what I submit to you, my brother, looking at our young folk, you know, the most important segment of our community, so many of our young folk, particularly our young ladies, are trapped in this self-absorbed persona about looking a certain way, wearing your hair a certain way. You know, all of these things are temporary and they will not add to the development of your mind and they will not contribute to you being an adult who will bring children into the world who understand who they are, whose shoulders they stand on, and what their potential is as young boys and girls. So, you know, I can't overemphasize this point. And again, in the book, In Survival Strategies, I make statements, I provide examples to validate those statements, and then I give a prescription as to what one can do in order to internalize this step in their mind, in their body, and in their spirit, so that after the end of this read, hopefully you will have been transformed from the inside out and you'll have a blueprint as to how you can move forward and begin to achieve this elusive thing called freedom. Nope, you're muted, brother. Yep.
You tell us about the prescription, Tony. That's important.
Yeah, well, you know, as I said, as someone who has been self-employed for 46 years, I live my life knowing that I have to constantly check what I'm doing to ensure that I'm going to achieve my objectives so that I can pay my mortgage, I can take care of all of my fiscal and social responsibilities. And so I understand that because of the extent to which African people in this country have been miseducated, and I want to stress this point too, that Curtis G. Woodson was the second African-American to receive a PhD from Harvard. And in an article that Woodson wrote for Marcus Garvey, Woodson said that it took him 30 years to get Harvard out of his brain.
Mm.
30 years to get Harvard out of his brain. And so we need prescriptive measures to help us understand where we are and how to get to where we go. So again, at the end of each step, I provide a prescription. I provide references so that if a person wants to drill down a bit deeper into a specific step, then I provide the resources so that people will understand this is not just Tony Browder saying these things. I'm giving you the sources from which I've derived this information so that you can see how I arrived at these conclusions. And I trust that with a thorough investigation in the particular step, then you will see the value of what I'm sharing with you. You will follow the prescriptions and then you will apply them and then proceed to the next step. So by the time we get to the 13th step, then we've got a mind that is clear, a mind that doesn't have to reinvent the wheel, but we can go back to the people who have created warehouses of wheels that we can access now in order to build a vehicle and the roads to carry us across so that future generations won't have to do this heavy lifting again.
Very important. The next step is, and we're on step four now, folks, we encourage you to get the book too. Information is power, but power is nothing without control. Talk to us about that, Tony. What do we mean when we say that?
Well, the inspiration for that came from an advertising for Pirelli tires back in the early 90s. And the tagline for that ad was power is nothing without control. And the spokesperson for this advertising campaign was Carl Lewis, the track runner. Mm-hmm. And I was in the UK doing some presentations and saw a Pirelli ad featuring Carl Lewis, an ad that I had not seen in the United States. It was Carl Lewis in a starting position with his hands on the ground, his butt up in the air, getting ready to take off, but he's wearing red high heel shoes. Now, I had never seen that ad in the United States. And I had to ask myself why. Pirelli didn't run that ad in the United States because they knew the black population was too large. They would find that ad offensive and it would undermine the efficacy of that advertising campaign, but they used it in an environment where we had no power, right? So I build this step four around the fact that if you don't have power or the control to use your power strategically, then the information means nothing.
Mm.
They go hand in hand. Get the intelligence, figure out what the opposition is doing, develop your plays, execute your plays. And if you are successful, you will win the ball game. You'll have control. So it's a very easy process, but we have to realize that it is a game and we have to know how to play the game to win.
Step five, empower your mind. See the world through African eyes.
As Tom Burrell said, black people are not dark-skinned white people. We have a different history. African people, the history of African people is the oldest history of human beings on the planet. Most people don't realize, and we aren't taught this in school, that the first Homo sapiens sapiens, modern man, lived in Africa, and Africa alone, 300,000 years ago. That's been documented, that's been substantiated. No one can deny that fact. We also know that, and the information that I'm sharing with you comes out of the an exhibit in the Smithsonian Museum of Natural History in the David Koch Hall of Human Origins, David Koch of the Koch brothers, right? This exhibition is over 20 years old. So the information is a little dated, but the truth is still there. In this exhibition, it states that Africans were the only people on the planet 200,000 years ago, and that Africans began walking out of Africa and populated Asia 60,000 years ago. And that another group of Africans walked out of Africa and populated Western Asia, the landmass that we now call Europe. They did that 40,000 6,000 years ago. So if we put a pin in those three historical markers, Africans were the first human beings on the planet. The first human beings in Asia were Africans. The first human beings in Europe were Africans. So everybody on this planet is of African ancestry. There's no such thing as race. Race was a false construct that was created by racists at Göttingen University in 1777. So these are historical facts which we aren't taught in school. Even in HBCU, we won't be taught this information. But the most important fact that we have to understand is one that I still don't hear people discuss, and that is geneticists have stated about 2 decades ago, geneticists have identified when the genes of Africans living in Europe mutated and they lost their melanin and Africans became Caucasians, i.e. white people. And white geneticists said that these genes mutated somewhere between 8 and 12,000 years ago. Now, understand the significance of that simple statement. So if Africans have been on this planet at least 300,000 years, and Europeans, the people who created this system of racism and white supremacy, have only been on this planet, let's just say, 10,000 years, it means that African people, people of African ancestry, have a 290,000-year head start on the people who have been oppressing us all of our lives. Why don't we know that history? So when we begin to see our world from that perspective, brother, we have tons and tons of life stories that validate who we are as human beings. And by internalizing these stories, we can begin to empower our mind and do the things that we were born here on earth to do. So that sums up the fifth step and solidifies that the power of reclaiming your mind so that then you can begin the process of reclaiming your body and achieve this thing called freedom.
As we get ready to move to body, folks, this is one of the things I've always argued. When we talk about our young people and how we approach teaching them and what they are learning or not learning in school, even in the STEM fields, we were the creators of STEM.
Absolutely.
African people. That's who we are. And imagine if that was infused into our self-esteem. If we knew that going in, that is within, you know, we talk about Kendrick, what Kendrick was doing even before this halftime show, royalty in my DNA.
Absolutely.
That's what Anthony Broward is saying there. So he's been exposed to that. We must expose ourselves to that. And if we would only help our young people understand that they are descendants rather of the first civilization builders, the first scientists, the first tradespeople, the first statespeople, all of that, the first people even to interpret humankind's perception and relationship with God, to speak to that, to acknowledge that, and so and to document that in those stories, mind, body. We're going to move to body now as we talk about the survival strategies for Africans in America. And now is the time. See, if you do these, if you go through this, Trump can't hurt you. You can't. He does not control your reality. In fact, you are prepared to resist and overcome Trump. All right. Part two.
Body. Step six is become aware of the uniqueness of your African body. So I'm sure when you lived in D.C., Brother Mark, were you familiar with Dr. John Chazelle?
I believe so, yeah.
Okay, he was a physician out of Baltimore.
Yeah, yeah.
And Dr. Chazelle often talked about the sick care system. He was the first person who I remember using that phrase. We don't have a healthcare system. We have a sick care system.
That's right.
The sick care system was created by white men for the benefit of white people. So in the medical industry, even the rats are white. They test all of the medicines on white rats and white rabbits because white genes are genetically inferior genes. They're the weakest genes of any structure. And so if you're creating medicines, you want those medicines to work best on the weakest genes. So everything in the medical industry is skewed toward white people. As a consequence, Black people, when they become ill, are often misdiagnosed or given doses of certain medications that don't work as well in our bodies because this system was not designed specifically for our healing. And so we have to become aware of the uniqueness of the African body. Yes, we're all human beings, but there are fundamental differences between men and women, between Blacks and whites and other races. So where you live determines your genetic makeup, determines how you respond to certain foods. Black folk, as we should know, as Black folk have a built-in lactose intolerance. Most Black people cannot drink cow's milk, right? Because we lack certain enzymes that allow us to digest the milk. So Black people who don't know that and feed their children cow's milk will have a propensity for colds, for flus, for mucus, for tonsillitis, and other illnesses that are directly associated with the consumption of foods that are not the correct foods that we should be internalized. Another good example is in the medical industry, the healthcare industry, there's a term that describes one being in picture-perfect health. And that term is being in the pink. God damn it. I got brown skin. I can never be in the pink. So the language in this profession is skewed toward white folk. So we have to begin to realize the uniqueness of our African bodies. Step 7 focuses on developing cultural and holistic approaches to health. And in that step, I talk about the symbol associated with the medical profession, the healing arts. That symbol is referred to as the caduceus, which is associated with a Greek personality, mythological figure by the name of Hermes. It's sometimes called the staff of Hermes. And so what I did was to trace the historical and cultural origins of that symbol and that Greek personality, Hermes, to his comedic origins, and that's Djibouti. I show an image taken from one of the oldest temples in Egypt, the temple of Seti I at Abydos, where you see Djibouti, who is the African personality who represents medicine, thought, writing, mathematics, science, and STEM. Djibouti represents STEM, this African personality. And he is holding two staffs with a cobra wrapped around it. So right. This symbol, this persona was co-opted by the Greeks who Europeanized him, right. Made him a Greek mythological figure named Hermes, and then Hermes became the person associated with the healing arts. So again, if you don't understand how the symbols associated with healing are African symbols, then our approach to healing will be quite different. And brother, that's one of the reasons why African Americans are some of the sickest people on this planet. We have the highest incidence of high blood pressure, the highest incidence of heart attacks and strokes. Black men in Washington, D.C. have the highest incidence of prostate cancer on the planet. African-American women have the highest incidence of cervical cancer and breast cancer. And I submit to you, my brother, one of the reasons, or two of the reasons why we suffer disproportionately to other so-called races here in this country is because of racism, as Isabella Wilkerson pointed out in, I think it was chapter 24 of her book, Caste, where she focused on medical disparities. And the other reason why we do so poorly is because of our diet. We are still eating a slave diet, a diet that is killing us, but we love it because that's what mama fed us. That's what big mama fed us. And so we like the food, but we never made the connection between poor health and diet.
Yeah. Yeah. No question about it. I want to just, if I can do this, I'm going to try to do this just so people can get a visual. This is from a brother's Facebook page because it's the one most handy to me. This is kind of the evolution of what our brother's speaking of, the staff of Tahuti, where you can see the original staff coming out of Kemet. I hope you all can see. Can you see that, Tony?
Oh, yes, I can.
Uh-huh. Yeah, I'm trying to make it a little bit bigger. So you can actually see how the staff, which later became the rod of Hermes, these are the symbols that we see when we go to the doctor's office, mm-hmm. without even realizing that comes from ancient Kemet and ancient Egypt. So I just want people to get that as well. That's very important information for people to be aware of. And you're right. We don't take. Let me ask you this, Tony. It's a sort, and I don't know how much you've addressed this. There's something out there, and I don't know whether it's an urban myth that says, because of the transatlantic slave trade, that is the issue with Black folk and salt. Do you know anything about that? Is that something that's real or what?
No, it's not so much the transatlantic slave trade. It is our diet. We eat foods that have a high sodium content because you don't find hypertension among African populations, continental African populations, but you do find hypertension among Africans who live in America because they eat what we eat. And so they develop the diseases that we develop. I will share this with you that is directly related to the Maafa, that is directly related to the transatlantic journey of our ancestors. And this comes from our dear friend, Dr. Patricia Newton, ancestor Patricia Newton. One of her popular statements was that the Africans who got on the slave ships were different than the Africans who got off of the slave ships. And what she was referring to is the new emerging science of epigenetics. Epigenetics is the study of how stress can change the genetic makeup of a man and a woman. And those changes in your DNA will be passed on to your children. The belief was that the genetic transference of certain material would happen across multiple generations, you know, 3 or 4 generations before you would start seeing the results of parents having been subjected to a stressful condition. Epigenetics proves that it happens in one generation. So because of what happened to our ancestors in the Maafa, because of the chemicals that were secreted during the capture, during the time spent in the slave dungeons, during the onboarding of the ships, during that journey, during the beatings, during the rapes, during the unimaginable horrors that happened to our people, it literally changed our genetic structure. So the Africans who got off those slave ships were a different people. Hence, African Americans are different in some respects than continental Africans. And so if you look at what we have done as a people here in this country, Brother Mark, you know that there is something special about African Americans. Nobody sings like us. Nobody, you know, engages in sports activities, dances like us. Nobody thinks like us. Nobody confronts evil like us. We have been a source of inspiration for the world since 1619. And that's because our genetic makeup was changed. It was changed for the better and it was changed for the worse. So what Survival Strategies is designed to do is to help make us aware of the positive and negative attributes that we have so that we can make a conscious choice to expand the positive, minimize the negative, so that we can achieve this elusive thing called freedom.
Just for everybody to be clear, I'm going to put it up on the screen. For those of you who are not familiar with the term Maafa, The definition is there on the screen. It's this Kiswahili term for the great disaster. And that was our experience, obviously, during the transatlantic slave trade, or some would say the African Holocaust, the Black Holocaust, so to speak. Steps 8 and 9, become aware of your mind-body relationships. You've walked us through some of that.
Sure.
Tell us more, if you will. And also, familiarize yourself with the mysteries of melanin.
Absolutely. Well, what anyone who has been involved, anyone who has lived, brother, knows that what you think determines what you say, what you do, and the quality of your health. There is a direct correlation between your thinking and your health. And I give some vivid examples, some practical demonstrations to illustrate that point. And so, like I mentioned earlier in the interview, that I've been self-employed for 46 years. And when I made, and one of the reasons why I was determined to be self-employed was, you know, I grew up, my mother was 16 when I was born. I grew up in my parents' household, my grandparents' household. And my grandparents and my mom were from Alabama, rural Alabama. They came to Chicago as part of the Great Migration. I saw my grandfather struggle to raise a family, 7 children, and now 1 grandchild in the same house, mm-hmm. where he was working for sub-minimum wage, treated, you know, so poorly on the job that he took his frustrations out on his wife and his children when he came home. So mm-hmm. I grew up seeing that, and I made a promise to myself that I would never work for anyone who didn't respect me as a Black man first. And so my best solution was I'm going to work for myself. And realizing that I was going to work for myself, I understood very clearly that if I'm sick, I can't work. And so I made a decision, listening to Baba Dick Gregory and following other folk, I made a decision to stop eating certain foods and to monitor, take responsibility for my health.
That's right.
So I can proudly say that this October 12th, 2025, I have not eaten meat or chicken for 50 years. So my health is good because of my understanding of my relationship between how my mind thinks and how my body operates. Another important aspect of this mind-body relationship has to do with the essence of melanin, knowing what melanin is. You're familiar with, as I trust your audience should be familiar with, the works of Dr. Francis Cress Wilson, who wrote the ISIS papers, talked about melanin, the power of melanin. They should also be familiar with another psychiatrist, a San Francisco-based psychiatrist named Dr. Richard King, who also wrote about melanin, wrote a series of articles and publications about the black dot, about melanin and the chemical key to greatness. The doorway to the ancestral realm. So these were scientists of the mind, who created melanin conferences in the 1980s and brought together scholars, historians, chemists, social scientists, and began to talk about the uniqueness of this chemical that not only determines the color of our skin, but it's a chemical that is in all the major organs of our body. It helps define our humanity. And I was fortunate to have hosted, I think it was the second Melanin Conference, National Melanin Conference at Howard University in 1989. And I got to know a number of these scholars and began to truly understand the power of something, melanin, which most of us have never heard of. And I'll share this one piece with you that I'm sure you can relate to. One of the presentations at the 89 Melanin Conference was by Carol Barnes, who was an organic chemist. And he talked about the fact that the chemical structure of melanin, melanin is an alkaloid. And melanin bonds to other alkaloid substances, such as heroin, cocaine, and marijuana. So Black folk who ingest those drugs will get higher faster, stay higher longer, and will have a more difficult time dealing with the effects of these drugs because it binds, literally binds to the melanin in their bodies. One of the participants in this conference was a dear beloved sister that you and I both know well, Dr. Adelaide Sanford, who was on the New York State Board of Regents. So after hearing these lectures and getting the documentation, she went to the next Board of Regents meeting where she presented some of this data and recommended that we take different approaches when dealing with students and others who have addiction problems. And brother, she was almost run out of the state of New York. They attacked her like she was Jeffrey Dahmer. Yeah. And then Time Magazine and a couple of other publications jumped on that and had headlines called Melanin Madness. They went after her. They went after Lynn Jeffries. And it was the beginning of the assault against Afrocentric scholarship.
That's right.
So melanin is a subject matter that is crucial to our ability to thrive as a people. We won't hear much about it in the general press or in the general sciences. And unfortunately, since the melanin conferences are no longer being held, most of the principals involved in that organization are now ancestors. There are too many people on YouTube, on social media, who know little to nothing about the subject matter and profess themselves to be experts. And so there's a ton of misinformation out there that is causing us more harm than good. So in step 9, I talk about the essence of melanin. I give the references, valid references that I want people to read and study for themselves so that they can understand the power of this chemical substance that identifies our essence as human beings. And one other important aspect of melanin that I got from my relationship with these scholars is that it is melanin that gives us this thing that we call soul. We move differently from others. We talk differently from others. We preach differently from others. We sing differently from others. We dress differently from others because of something that's in our DNA. So if we know who we are, if we know what we carry, that will translate into us thinking, speaking, and doing things differently, which will allow us to achieve this elusive thing that we call freedom.
Absolutely. It's in our DNA, folks, as Brother Kendrick is trying to say to us. So we've talked about mind and body. And folks, the book, Survival Strategies for Africans in America, is available wherever books are sold.
But I would prefer they go to our website, ikg-info.com, or go to your local Black bookstore and let Amazon be your last purchaser of choice.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. We got to be about that too, y'all, because, you know, it's no point in boycotting Target if we're going to start buying everything from Amazon. Part 3, 10, 11, 12, 13, spirit, mind, body, now spirit, sisters and brothers.
So,
yeah, please go ahead.
I'll run through the 4 and then I'll kind of lump them together in my discussion. Step 10, learn to interpret religious imagery. Step 11, learn to honor the memory of your ancestors. Step 12, learn to prepare yourself for war and peace. Step 13, learn how to live in the new America. Learning to interpret religious imagery, brother, that chapter comes out of many trips that I made to Ghana in the 90s. I must have gone to Ghana about a dozen times, and I was so happy to go home, right? To eat my grandmother's food, to see my relatives walking down the road in rural Ghana. But what really shocked me was, one, the number of white missionaries I found in Ghana. I could be in the bush and I see a white person just walking out of anywhere. They're there to recolonize African minds. And they understand the best means to do it, to come in, to build libraries, to build hospitals, to build wells, to help the people, and then to give them their interpretation of God. And the thing that shocked me the most, my brother, is that everywhere in Ghana, I saw these huge billboards with the blind, blue-eyed Jesus.
Yeah.
Right? And that bothered me because, you know, here in the States in the 60s, Black folk began to, you know, use Christianity as a means to liberate our minds and our souls. But we also began to see Jesus as a African, a person of color. And so I thought that issue was resolved. But in travel to Ghana, I realized that the oppressor is strategically using religion to enslave our minds and our spirits. And so I articulate that in this chapter, and I talk about how important it is to learn to interpret religious imagery and see the creator through your own cultural lens. And then step 12 focuses on learning to honor our ancestors. And this is so important because, you know, Black folk are some of the most religious people on the planet, right?
Right. That's right.
And we believe in God because we know God is real. We know spirit is real. What we don't understand is the extent to which some people have used religion as a tool of oppression and enslavement. And so many of our people, I've found in my lectures and in my writings, many of our people have been socialized to believe that to call on your ancestors is to engage in devil worship.
Right.
It's something that is pagan. And that's only because, and that's a thought planted in our minds by our oppressors to separate us from our real strength and power. We are alive, my brother, because of the ancestors whose DNA we carry and whose memory we also carry within our souls. So one of the reasons why we have not been exterminated, we should be gone. We should have been wiped off the face of this planet based on what happened to us throughout the 444 years of the Maafa. But we are here because of what resides in our DNA. We're here because our connection to ancestors. That has been our most significant survival mechanism. I now refer to ancestral intelligence, knowing our ancestors and knowing how to pour libations, setting up an altar in your home and honoring, you know, those ancestors known and unknown whose memory gives you strength, courage, and protection. I call ancestral intelligence the only AI that matters to people of African ancestry. That's the AI that has constantly saved our souls. This other AI that Musk and the others are talking about, that's going to lead to the destruction of European civilization, African civilization, and world civilization because it will be mismanaged just as they have mismanaged other resources on this planet. Climate change is real because of all the fossil fuels that they have been using. The world, the waters of the world are polluted because of all the toxins that are dumped in the water. So, you know, the people who have run our lives for the last 500 years have been terrible stewards of this planet. And so we've got to understand what our ancestors understood and be courageous enough to call on them, to ask for their guidance and protection in order to help us figure a way out of this war that we've been in all of our lives. Step 12 is learn to prepare yourself for war and peace. So the reality is, I remember in the 90s seeing an ad for the U.S. Army that says the first battlefield takes place in the mind.
Mm.
And I've also come to learn that the first casualty of every war is the truth. We have been fighting a war all of our lives. We just haven't seen the bombs bursting in air and the rockets' red glare, but we've seen the murder of the Michael Browns and the George Floyds and U.S. citizens who should have been protected by the police force. And yet we continue to die and nobody seems to give a damn. And when there is a gut reaction, as there was with the murder of George Floyd, and the only reason there was a gut reaction around the world was because this courageous 18-year-old sister videotaped his murder. And people saw that. And that caused the largest social protest in the history of humanity. Mm-hmm. And as a consequence, businesses said, all right, my bad. We're going to deal with DEI. We're going to bring more Black folk into our corporations. We're going to treat you all fairly and responsibly. Yeah. How long did that last? And now 92 is rolling all of that back. You know, we didn't mean it.
Yeah.
We didn't mean it. So yeah. We're still fighting a war, right? And now that 92 is acting like the reincarnation of Woodrow Wilson, kicking Black folk out of the federal government, ensuring that our middle class is eroded, and doing other things to make America white again, we're going to find ourselves marginalized like we've never been marginalized in our lifetime. That's real. That's coming. And so given that reality, we should not just react to it, because what is past is prologue. That's why we study the past. As Dr. Clark said, there's nothing new in the world except the history you do not know, right? Mm. That all history is a current event. So we study history in order to understand what's happening now. And we look at the best examples of how our ancestors resolved these same problems, or at least addressed these problems 50, 100, 150 years ago. So we know what to do, but also we know what not to do. And then we apply those principles as we prepare ourselves for war and peace. And as Sun Tzu says, and I reference him in this particular chapter, the best way to prepare for war is to be so strong that your enemy doesn't mess with you. The bullies go pick on someone else. So we have strength, we have power that we have never fully utilized. And sometimes it takes a disaster such as the re-election of 92 to make us wake up and start doing the things that we've always had the capacity to do, to move beyond boycotts and to withhold our labor as well as our funds from people who have proven themselves to not have our best interests at heart. And when we begin to apply these principles, concepts, and ideas, these 12 steps that I articulated in this book, and begin to apply them, we will have some tools that will allow us to live in the new America. Because this is a brand new world, brother. This is a brand new world that we're living in. Everything has shifted. And these shifts are going to extend beyond the four-year term of the current occupant of the White House. These shifts are going to transform the lives of the next four generations. They're going to impact us for the next 60 years. My grandson is going to have to deal with the after effects of this madness that we're witnessing right now. So we can't sit on the fence and complain. We've got to get busy, and we've got to be clear about what we're doing. Yes, sir.
Yep. Well, I just want to say, I mean, we're still dealing with the after effects of Ronald Reagan.
Absolutely.
And I want to remind economics. People. Mm-hmm. Make America Great Again was his slogan.
Absolutely.
So, mm-hmm. So one thing they'll do, see, they get their ancestry and they try to bring it back. Mm-hmm. They try to relive Andrew Jackson, Woodrow Wilson, and Ronald Reagan. We must do the same thing. We can't.
But they're doing a real good job. They're not trying to do it. They're doing an excellent job.
So because we can't discard ours, y'all. We got to figure out ways to reinvoke our ancestry and learn from their successes and mistakes and implement them. We don't need to reinvent the wheel. I just want to, let me just share a couple of comments that came in on YouTube, which is where a lot of the hate is. This is, and this is an ironic name, Standing Bear, which is an indigenous name.
Sure.
You are either Americans or not. Stop the BS and forever victim. Be an American for a change and drop the hate. But his name is Standing Bear.
Oh, yeah. I am an American. You know, I'm a citizen of the United States. I have a passport. I vote. I pay taxes. I'm an American. And one of the benefits of being an American, specifically being an African American, is that we have made America great because of our sacrifices.
That's right.
We made it easy for foreigners to come over here and reap the benefits of our beatings, of our murders, of everything bad that could happen to a people has happened to us.
That's right.
And it's because we stood strong that others can come over here and stand on our backs. So don't get it twisted, man. I am an American.
CDAG responded, and I had shared one more standing bear. So we just supposed to roll over. If white America would stop victimizing us, then we wouldn't be victims. We will never accept being hated as normal. So a little pushback from there. And there's something here I just thought I would be interesting to share. Is it Shelty Songs? There she is. Not black, but wanting to support the stream by being another viewer.
Mm-hmm.
Well, this is someone who's not even black who is getting something from this. Mm-hmm. And Lord knows in that regard, there hasn't been a social justice or civil rights or human rights movement in this country that has not benefited from the African-American struggle and that has not benefited from the African-American presence.
Mm-hmm.
That's around the world. Yes. In Beijing and China in the uprising, they were singing, "We Shall Overcome."
Yes.
So that is part of, and again, what we're saying, folks, that doesn't make us, we're not saying we're superior. Nobody's replacing, the idea of supremacy comes from one group of people. This is not about supremacy. This is just about historical fact. And every culture has something to offer humankind. This is Black History Month, so with everybody's permission, shortest month of the year, for 28 years, we'll talk about our contributions to humankind.
I wish it was 28 years, brother.
28 days, I'm sorry.
That's okay. Days. I get your point.
I used to joke and say to people, you know, let's practice this for 28 days, and then March 1st, we can go back to self-hatred. I don't really want you to do that. We shouldn't go back to self-hatred. But for 28 days, let's lift up our culture, learn about our culture, learn more about ourselves, learn how to survive. And that's why the book is here, Survival Strategies for Africans in America, 13 Steps to Freedom with Tony Bride. And I put the link on the screen.
Okay.
I it from there. I also put it in the comments on Facebook and YouTube and elsewhere. I'll put it in Instagram and whatnot so you can go there and also find it there. And Tony,
can I do this? Let me just expand upon Dr. Carter G. Woodson's vision for Negro History Week.
Come on.
Woodson understood that Africans in America were being intentionally miseducated. And so he created Negro History Week as 7 days where we would showcase what our children had learned in the segregated schools where we taught them. Now, what he said was, we're going to teach our history 365 days out the year, but we're going to set aside 1 week where we're going to bring our children front and center so that they can showcase what they have learned to their community, right? So that's the essence of Negro History Week. And it was Dr. John Henry Clark and other scholars who expanded Negro History Week into Black History Month. But my thing is always, the story of the oldest human beings on the planet, human beings, Homo sapiens sapiens, who've lived here for 300,000 years, cannot be limited to the shortest month of the year or one decade, as the United Nations has given us and is now extending that decade. So what I'm suggesting is that Black history is not just for Black people. It is for the world. Everyone can benefit knowing our history, just as I have benefited from learning Greek history and Roman history and Irish history and British history and French history and South American history. Everybody needs to know everybody's story. Everybody should have a right to tell their story and to tell accurate remembrances of their ancestral contribution to humanity. And the other point I want to share is this, that I have come to understand that this whole issue that we're dealing with here, the miseducation of everybody, not just quote unquote Negroes, but everybody, the bottom line is, it's not about black, white, red, brown, or yellow. The bottom line is consciousness.
Yeah.
It is about consciousness. And your consciousness is determined by what you know of yourself, what you know of the world, and what you know of others. I know some white folk who I trust better than some black folk that I know. I know some Native Americans. You know, so for me at this point in my life, it is your consciousness. It is the content of your character, as Dr. King said, that matters most to me. Now, because of the fact that I am an African American, I'm going to focus on myself. I'm going to focus on my family because that makes sense. That's what human beings do. But I'm not excluding anybody. If you come correct and you're willing to, as the listener that you just referenced, if you come correct and you understand the truth when you hear it, and you make a conscious choice to align yourself with people, with movements and organizations that are truthful and have a track record of being honest, then yeah, you're invited to the party. Let's work together to make this world a better place for our descendants.
Amen. Anthony Browder with us, folks. Now, before we give final instructions on the book, Tony, you've got another event coming up, don't you? You mentioned to me the John Henry Clark Enhanced History Exhibition. Are you ready to announce that?
Oh, yes, I can. Yes, thank you for this opportunity. I've referenced Dr. Clark several times in my talk today. Dr. Clark is now an ancestor who I revere wholeheartedly, a brilliant scholar, a man who has modeled for us what consciousness, historical consciousness is, what you do when you have historical consciousness. So I am curating a permanent exhibition that will be housed on the second floor of the Thurgood Marshall Center here in Washington, D.C., 1816 12th Street Northwest. And in this exhibition, we will have 400 square feet of wall space where we'll have 16 infographics that will tell the story of 8,000 years of African history, excellence, and success. Visually and with text and QR codes that will link you to video content that will expand African history beyond the 28 days or 29 days that it has been confined to. And my primary reason for doing this had to do with my initial visit to the National Museum of African American History and Culture in October of 2016. Incredible building, incredible artifacts, but I was disturbed by the fact that our story begins five stories underground with slavery. That first portion of the exhibit is in a space that is designed to make the viewers feel claustrophobic. It's black. The walls are black. The ceilings are black. So you are supposed to feel as though you're in a slave ship. And as I first walked through that space, I'm ear hustling. I'm always monitoring people to see how they're responding to information and how they're being affected by certain environments. And I noticed a pair of elderly sisters walking through that space, holding each other, crying.
Yeah.
I saw two elderly brothers walking and heard one say to the other, "I need to get out of this space before I kill some white person." And I realized then that these people had no understanding of the Ma'afa. And so they're being dropped into this space and are not psychologically prepared to endure what they were exposed to.
Right,
but because
right.
of the fact of my relationship with Clark and other scholars, I knew our story did not begin in slavery. So Dr. Clark often told us that if you begin your story with slavery, everything since then looks like progress. So I was able to get funding to curate this exhibition, which documents 8,000 years of African success and excellence. And it will open on March the 22nd, which is a Saturday, and will be a permanent exhibition at the Thurgood Marshall Center, which everyone who comes to Washington, D.C., is invited to come and see. It's free. It's open to the public 6 days a week from 9 to 5. And we want people to learn about African history and culture. I want people to begin to see the world through different eyes so that they will be psychologically, emotionally, and culturally prepared to live in the new America and become determiners of their own destiny.
And folks, the Thurgood Marshall Center also houses the headquarters of the National Newspaper Publishers Association and Black Press USA, on whose website this segment is being shown live right now. You can go back and watch it there again if you like at blackpressusa.com. Folks, ikgculturalresourcecenter.com. And Tony, the website will also have the details about the grand opening?
Yes, it will. Okay. Absolutely.
Mm-hmm. So folks, stay tuned there. Get the book. Get a new book for Black History Month. All right, again, 28 days, y'all. Let's try to focus in. And Anthony Browder has given us some of the survival strategies, 13 steps, in fact, resources that we need to get through what we are facing right now. Survival strategies for Africans in America, 13 steps to freedom with our dear friend and brother Anthony Browder. And not just that book, he has a number of other books he's written. He has really become a repository for many of the great scholars like Dr. Yosef Benyakin and Dr. John Henry Clark and Dr. Sharshi McIntyre and many others who are not yet ancestors. Leonard Jeffries is still here. He is the uncle of the majority leader of the Democrats in the House of Representatives. So and Tony has also helped us remember ancestors like Listavelle Middleton, and she mentioned Pat Newton, Dr. Welsing. Neely Fuller just made his transition days ago, and many others. And so we're thankful for that as well. My brother, always meaningful to have these conversations with you. We don't do them often enough. Hope everyone has learned something. I always do. Every time I talk to Tony, I learn something new from what I learned before and the way he presents it and in what he shares. This is about us loving and appreciating and knowing our minds, our bodies, and our spirits. That is what we must be about. If we are survived, folks depressed, folks going through, folks traumatized behind, as I'm a bar that behind 92.
Mm-hmm.
But we've been here before.
Absolutely.
And I doubt folks like Frederick Douglass and Harriet Tubman had the luxury of, or even our ancestors on the ships, had the luxury of articulating depression. You know, so we've got to keep fighting. We've got to remind ourselves who we are and lift ourselves up with this knowledge. Once again, Survival Strategies for Africans in America, 13 Steps to Freedom, available at IKG Cultural Resource Center, ikgculturalresourcecenter.com.
Actually, a shorter URL is ikg-info.com.
Okay.
ikg-info.com will get you there.
ikg-info.com. Now, I actually put the exact URL to the book itself in the comments.
Perfect.
On Facebook and on YouTube, it's in the comments. So go and look at that, and you all can see. My brother, thank you so much, all right?
It's always my pleasure, brother. And I love you. I love what you're doing.
Thank you.
And, you know, we are brothers in the struggle. We are brothers in victory. And I look forward to running the victory lap with you.
That's right.
In the very near future.
That's right. Tony and I have been doing this for a long time, y'all. And as somebody once said, we probably have forgotten more.
Oh, absolutely. No question. But I knew you when I had hair, you know, that was a while ago. And let me say before the world, you know, I'm proud of you. You know, I knew you when you were a college student. when you were standing tall while others were hiding. So you've been consistent, and I'm here for you, right? That's the best I can say. I'm here for you, brother. I respect you. I love you. And whatever you need, you have it.
Well, I appreciate that, brother. Back at you. Reciprocity. I feel the same way. I didn't even know I needed to hear that today, but I did.
Absolutely.
So give thanks, brother. We're going to make it, y'all. We can make it if we try.
All right.
Folks, thanks for joining us. This will also be on the podcast. Wherever you get your podcast, download that as well. Survival strategies for Africans in America. 13 steps to freedom, y'all. IKG-info.com. Be sure to go there and check it out. Thank you, everybody.
Thanks for getting woke and listening to Make It Plain. As always, perform an act of kindness on behalf of an elder or young person. Write a letter to a sister or brother who just so happens to find her or himself incarcerated. Offer libations to the ancestors upon whose sturdy shoulders we all now stand. And above all, give thanks to the God of your understanding by whatever name you call her and him. All God asks of us is that we give each other love. Thanks for giving MIP love. And please remember to subscribe and give us a 5-star rating. If all hearts and minds are clear, it has been made plain.